Do you want to know why the rich keep getting richer? Well, that's what we're going to discuss in today's episode of the Michael ERD podcast. This is one of the shows I'm calling the Summer Series, where we're playing some of the most popular episodes of the past. Now, this is in particular for the many thousands of new subscribers, but the great chat I'm having with Tom Corley today, my co-author of the great international bestseller Rich Habits, Poor Habits, the chat I'm having with Tom will be of great interest to the regular subscribers of my podcast as well. And it's likely we're going to annoy some people today, just like we did when the show first aired. Because what we're going to do is tell you some hard truths about why there is a wealth gap in Western countries. And it's not the sort of thing that the politicians, the media, our teachers, and unfortunately some parents are telling. In fact, it's something they're all ignoring. So what's really causing the wealth gap? Why are the rich continuously getting richer? Well, at the end of today's show, you'll understand, you'll know why, but more importantly, you'll be able to do something about it. So welcome to today's episode.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropol, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Today, I'd like to have a chat with Tom Corley about the truth regarding the wealth gap that's happening all over the world. In Australia recently, Roy Morgan's wealth report showed that the rich are getting richer. Now, we hear that all the time, but it also showed that the middle class in Australia over the last decade or so really hasn't progressed financially. They haven't gone back, but they haven't had the benefits of the wealth that Australians should deserve. And it's much the same all over the world. And I know Tom Corley's done a deep study on that. So let's have a chat and find out what's going on and some hard truths about the wealth gap. Welcome, Tom.
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Great, thank you. Now, Tom, this is nothing new. You've written about this for a long time, and it came from your five-year Rich Habits study where you asked 361 rich people and 144 poor people a whole lot of questions about themselves. It added up to lots of questions, but you came to some conclusions, which we've come to in different ways. I've come to, researchers come to, but it's created some enemies along the way, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, I did a Dave Ramsey interview a number of years ago, and boy, we got clobbered by CNN. They wrote a nasty piece, and I really felt horrible about, they made me feel horrible about myself. But if you want to improve and you want to get better, you have to come face to face with these truths that we're going to talk about, because otherwise you're just going to be mired in poverty and or mediocrity. These truths kind of are like a light. They shine a light on, what you have to do and what to do and what not to do.
So they make you feel bad because you pointed out that if you want to become rich, in the countries where people are listening to this podcast in general, you can do so. I know that in your study, a lot of the millionaires were self-made millionaires. They weren't born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And you actually brought out some truths about why the rich are rich and the poor are poor, about the wealth gap. So let's have a quick talk about some of these hard truths. And again, this is not a judge of people. We're not judging that the rich are better or more successful, because we know many rich people who are unhappy, miserable, and many poorer people who are still happy. But if I had a choice, I'd rather have some money, Tom.
Yeah, you got that right. I mean, you can be happy when you're poor, God bless you, but you can also be happy when you're rich. And money, as I probably on different podcasts that we've had, Michael, I've shared with you that, the wealth eliminates about 67% of the problems in life. So, yeah, money is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's nothing wrong with pursuing wealth.
You're right. Any problem that money can solve isn't a problem. Now, there's lots of problems money can't solve. But you found some hard truths. And I think one of the ones that probably dug at some people, annoyed some people, was one of the reasons for the wealth gap is what you said were bad parents. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I think this is the number one cause of poverty in the industrialized world. Bad parenting. These are parents who, they're not doing their job. And when I say that, I mean, sure, they're feeding their kids, they're providing shelter, and they're doing all the things that they probably think are important, but they're not mentoring their kids for success, Michael. And because they're not mentoring their kids for success, the kids, you know, they're wallowing in whatever habits the parents do pass along to their kids. If you're poor, you're going to pick up some of the poor habits that the parents have, and you're going to wallow in poverty. So parents, for a lot of reasons, are to blame. You know, if they're not teaching success habits to their kids, how on earth do you expect your kids to become successful?
Now, we know that children develop habits from things they see, things they experience, things they hear, and their mentors as a child are really their parents. And unfortunately, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So some people would say, well, it's not my fault. What do you expect of me? My father was an alcoholic. My father was drunk. My mother wasn't educated. But that's not really the case, Tom, because you also see people who actually are the opposite and say, well, what do you expect of me? Of course I've been successful because my father was a drunk, my father was an alcoholic, my mother was poor. So it can go either way.
Yeah, and so this is such a good point that you bring up. And the point is this. It really doesn't matter what your upbringing was. If your desire is to improve and to get better and to pursue success, there's, especially in this day and age with the internet, there's so much opportunity to learn out there that doesn't cost you anything or that costs you just a little bit of money. You can learn from other people who started out in the same spot that you did, and you can pick up, they can become your mentors. Books can be mentors. You know, Michael, you and I read a lot of books, and we write books. And why do we do that? Because we're, you know, our whole world kind of is surrounded by books. That's where we get a lot of our learning from, because our parents didn't necessarily have the habits that we needed to succeed in life. So we had to learn it somewhere else. And that's why we're doing this podcast, is to try and help people to learn what to do and what not to do.
Sure. So the first hard truth about the wealth gap is that bad mentoring from parents is more likely to, but not certainly, going to give you a disadvantage in life. Now, another one is broken families. And unfortunately, the divorce rate in Australia and in America, and I guess most Western countries, has gone up. So how has that affected the wealth of our nations?
Well, I think in the subset of parents is this broken family thing. When you have parents who have abandoned, one parent who's abandoned the family unit, well, that puts you immediately behind the eight ball, because whereas before you might have been able to have two people, you know, two heads are better than one, at least if you have two people who can share some insight into life with you, now you have one. And if it's a broken family, typically that one parent who's remaining is working their butt off just trying to survive and not be homeless. And so they don't have a lot of time. So two parents, there's more time to teach the kids what they need to learn. One parent, because of a broken home, and a broken home happens for a lot of reasons, incarcerations, abandonment, as I mentioned, divorce. You know, if the divorced parent gets married and they start another family, that takes them away from you even more if you're a child. There's a lot, you know, drugs, you name it. There's so many reasons why there are broken families. But, you know, this is the point. The point is this. If you're from a broken family, you're already behind the eight ball. You're going to have to work a little bit harder to figure out what to do and what not to do. And you're not going to get it at home.
No, you're not going to get it at home, so you've got to find your mentors elsewhere. And as you said, part of our mission is to help as many people as possible become financially fluent and become more financially independent. Now, as we work through the 10 hard truths about the wealth gap that you've written about, another one you mentioned is that the poor don't have a good work ethic.
Yeah, and this again, this comes from the parents. So my dad, he had this incredible work ethic, Michael. He was working long hours. He was running political campaigns. He was constantly for major politicians in the New York City area. He was constantly on the phone, and we used to marvel as kids at our dad because he was just one person doing all of these things. So we developed a work ethic from that. But if you have, if you don't come from that kind of background and you have parents instead where they're unemployed a lot of the time and they're sitting at home, maybe they're at the bar and they're just, you just pick up their bad habits. Their lousy work ethic is a bad habit. And you can't survive in the real world if you have a bad work ethic. So that, that's just something that you'll be struggling with your whole life if you don't have a good work ethic.
Now, we've mentioned habits a few times, so it's probably worthwhile reminding our listeners that we're all walking around with some good habits, some bad habits, some rich habits, some poor habits, some habits that are empowering us and some habits and beliefs that are disempowering us. That's normal. What we want to do is have more good habits, more rich habits, and fewer poor habits. And by the way, if you're wanting to know more about this, Tom and I have written a great book, Rich Habits, Poor Habits. Just go to richhabitspoorhabits.com and you can find out all about it. And it's been published in, I think, 4 or 5 different editions around the world now, Tom, in different languages. So we're very proud that it has not just been a local bestseller, but an international bestseller. But I guess what we're saying is our habits have been formed early in life. You can change your habits, but they've been formed early in life by our mentors. And so far, we've talked about, in general, our habits are formed by our first mentors, our children, our parents. Another one you mentioned is financial negligence. The poor don't have the financial discipline or the concept of delayed gratification that the rich have.
Yeah, and here again, this is a large part of the result of their poverty. You know, poor people are poor because they don't make enough money. That's number one. And they don't save enough money to help, dig themselves out of the rut that they're in. And so that you pick up a lot of these bad habits from your parents. For example, if you're poor and all you know is money comes in and money goes out, you spend everything. Well, that's a habit that follows you into your adult life. So even when you're making a decent salary as an adult, what your brain's telling you is, money comes in and money goes out. So you got to spend all the money, and you do, because that's a habit, instead of, putting some money aside in savings, because nobody ever did that in your family, so you don't know how to do it. So they don't do it. And there are, things that they engage in that, even when they're making a little bit more money, and want spending, spontaneous emotional based spending, lifestyle creep. They increase the size of their house. They buy a new car. They do things that keep them in the fold of spending everything that they make, because that's a habit that they forged since they were kids.
But that's so much easier to do nowadays, Tom, with credit cards, where plastic money, where you don't actually even see money change hand, and there's Afterpay and you just tap and go. So it's so easy to forget those really, really important lessons of spend less than you earn. Put it aside. Put 10, 15% of your money aside. Save it and then invest it. And that's really a form of delayed gratification that more people have to learn, isn't it?
And, there's 4 paths to wealth. One of them is the saver investor path. And most poor people are going to either be stuck in the saver, and that's the path that they have the best shot at rising from poverty, is the saver investor path. That's saving, 10 or 20% of your income, investing it prudently, and then do that consistently. If you do that, you will eventually break free from poverty, but you have to, it has to be a habit, right, Michael? And they just never saw that growing up, so they don't know that. That's one of the ways to escape poverty.
Well, we're going to probably annoy somebody else now as we talk about the habits of the poor that keep them that way and creates the wealth gap. And one of them is the they believe that they're going to be poor. They can't see themselves getting out of poverty, Tom.
No, that's right. They're almost hopeless. They have this feeling of hopelessness that they, you know, was part of their upbringing. So they're taking it with them into their adult world. They believe that because of their parents saying over and over again, you know, poor people never get rich. It's almost impossible to get rich. You have to, you know, the people that are wealthy, the people that inherited their money. So they buy into all of that. And so it becomes a limiting belief. And so as they get on with their adult lives, they have this feeling of hopelessness that they're never going to be able to break free from poverty. So they, you know, that limiting belief causes their subconscious mind to send messages to the conscious mind to engage in certain activities that are going to keep you poor.
One of the activities that keeps them poor also is that they don't seem to look after themselves, their bodies, their health, as much as the wealthy people do, Tom.
Yeah, and I learned this from my research, my study. One of the wealthy people in my study, because I asked him, he was 67 years old, he was worth about $17 million. And I said, you know, why don't you retire and do some fun things, travel and all that stuff? And he said, I literally spent my entire adult life exercising every day so that I could work more years, because he felt that the later years were going to be the years at the tail end of his career were going to be his highest earning years. This is the case with most people. You know, poor people don't exercise daily like they should. Some of them do, but not the vast majority don't. They don't eat healthy. They're eating junk food. And this is just a statistic, a data metric that's out there, that the poor people are the ones that visit the fast food restaurants the most. You know, for them, it's cheap, it's inexpensive and high calories. So they can feed their entire family on, you know, say $12 or $13 at one of these fast food restaurants, and they don't have to do the preparation and all that stuff. So they're eating junk food, and they, you know, because their lives are miserable and they're hopeless, and they have this limiting belief, this poverty ideology, they tend to, you know, try and seek out things to numb them, like alcohol and drugs. It's a momentary escape from their poverty when they're under the influence of something. So, you know, all of these things kind of cause them to be unhealthy and overweight. And, you know, next thing you know, the millionaire that I was talking about before, he told me, look, you can't make money from a hospital bed. I don't care who you are. And so his point was, look, you got to exercise every day. You got to stay healthy so that you can work as many years as you can to create, you know, some type of nest egg so that you can retire at some point or not be poor in your retirement years, you know?
Now, Tom, I can understand why when you ran this conversation with Dave Ramsey and you said some of these things, it offended some people. And people who aren't financially where they are at the moment are going to get a little bit offended by what we say as well. So I want to remind people, this is not a judge of people. It's, in fact, the hard facts that you've come up with. And yes, there are some generalizations there, and there are a lot of people who started off poor who've moved to the next level. But if we bring home some of these realizations, somebody's going to be listening to this and say, yeah, not all of those things apply to me, but maybe one or two of these things apply to me. How can I change that? I think that's what we're trying to tell people. So we're not judging you. We're saying, hey, if you're not doing it right, first of all, recognize what's holding you back and then stop blaming other people. Take control of your life. Isn't that what we're after, Tom?
Yeah, the whole purpose of this, Michael, is to just bring some self-awareness into people's minds, you know, so that they can, you know, they may not like it. It's a hard truth, and they may actually hate us for bringing it up. But we planted a seed, and they might become self-aware the next time, and they might see something that they're doing that could be contributing to poor health or their mindset, their poverty mindset. And then they can say, whoa, wait a minute. You know, I do that. And maybe that's part of my problem. So, you know, it's tough to be open-minded sometimes. It really is. But, you know, what we're trying to do here is say, look, we just want you to be open-minded. Don't take offense to this. Just take it for what it's worth. This is a study. This is data I gathered. That's all it is. And if it can help you escape poverty or rise from the middle class to wealth, then it's worth it to, you know, to get, you know, a little bit agitated from hearing this stuff. Maybe it'll, you know, a lot of times when you hear things that you don't like, it takes a couple of days for that information to seep into your brain and for your subconscious to kind of, you know, absorb it and process it, right? And then, you know, that's all we're trying to do. Plant the seed so that you can maybe become self-aware of some of the poor habits that might be holding you back.
Well, I know one of the things that you and I get a lot of joy from is when people send us emails and say, hey, I read your book, I read your blogs, I listened to your podcast, and I've changed my life. That really is one of the things that drives us. And we're seeing that so often with people who've read Rich Habits, Poor Habits. So if you're interested in finding out more about what the rich think, how they do things, what drives them, get a copy of Rich Habits, Poor Habits. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it in bookshops. But the easiest place really nowadays seems to be just to get it online at richhabitspoorhabits.com or on Amazon. Now, Tom, you're also suggesting that the poor are uneducated. Now, I know you're not saying that in a nasty way. They don't pursue their education, do they?
Well, let me give you a perfect example of this. So when I was 18, I had no intention of going to college. I just knew my parents couldn't afford it. I had no money. So how the heck was I going to go to college? Well, one of my best friends said, don't worry about it. Just apply to college and you'll figure it out. Well, I did. I applied. I thank God for my friend Sal who talked me into it. And I ended up getting a job as a janitor. I worked 20 hours a week. And then I went to school, you know, during the day, worked at night as a janitor. And I figured it out. And I thank God, because we were poor, most people, because you're poor, you don't look at your life and say, well, I'm going to go to college, because you know your parents don't have the money and you don't have the money. Well, you can figure it out and go to school at night. I did that for grad school. And I, you know, worked as a janitor, as I said. So you can figure it out. But education is so important. And it's not just a formal education that I'm talking about here, a college education or a master's degree or whatever. It's reading to learn. You know, I have, you know, the statistics from my Rich Habits study are horrible when it comes to the poor people and reading. You know, only 3% of the poor said that they read 30 minutes or more a day to learn. That means 97% of the poor people weren't reading to learn. So, and if you're not going to read to learn, or you're not going to try and improve yourself, how on earth you're going to just throw it up there to random good luck? Hope that someday you get really lucky. That's never going to happen. That's a needle in a haystack. It's unrealistic. So you have to educate yourself. You have to do it the hard way. You have to self-educate if you don't have enough money to go and get a formal education. You know, a lot of the wealthy people didn't graduate college. They didn't even go to college. I mean, Andrew Carnegie was at one time the wealthiest man in the world. And he had a third grade education. Abraham Lincoln was president of the United States. He didn't get past the fifth grade. So it doesn't the important thing is, if you're poor and you can't go and get a formal education, then self-educate. There's, you know, libraries. You can go online now with the internet. My gosh, there's so much you can learn. You can become an expert in anything online.
Of course, it doesn't stop when your university or your college stops. You've got to keep educating yourself. And while we talked about reading, you can also watch videos on YouTube, but not the ones of the cats doing funny twists and turns. You can educate yourself by listening to TEDx talks, by watching Tom and my podcasts and videos on YouTube, by listening to podcasts. So self-education is a really critical, rich habit. But in your list of 10 habits, 10 hard truths that have created the wealth gap that unfortunately the politicians are ignoring and the media are ignoring because they don't like talking about them. Another one you came up with, and we keep coming up with it as we discussed it already so far, is that the poor have many bad habits and fewer of the good, or rich habits as we call them.
Yeah. So the metaphor I like to use on this is think of habits as a seesaw, right? So you have good habits on one side of the seesaw and you have bad habits on the other side of the seesaw. With the poor people in my study, they had on one side of the seesaw an abundance of poor habits. They did have good habits, but they had an abundance of these poor habits. And because they had too many poor habits, and trust me, wealthy people have poor habits too. But because the poor people have just a preponderance of poor habits, it pushes the teeter-totter all the way down into one side, and it, you know, kind of anchors you in poverty. So adopting some of these rich habits that we're talking about kind of, at least if you balance out the teeter-totter, the seesaw, maybe you can rise from poverty to the middle class. And if you actually keep at it and add more and more rich habits over the years, you can get it going in the opposite direction and become wealthy. So that's the whole point of that is too many bad habits are going to hold you back and keep you poor.
Now, the last two things I'd like to discuss, the last 10 of your hard truths about the wealth gap that the politicians and the media ignore are going to annoy some people, are going to offend some people. And the first one is that the poor have an entitlement ideology. By the way, I agree in principle that is the case for a lot of them. So I agree with what you're saying. But some people would say, no, that's not right. That's not me.
Well, it's funny, but a lot of the emails, the comments that I get from the articles that I write, in particular, the ones that kind of go viral, boy, you should read some of these comments or emails. They're horrible. These people, they will go, they'll spend 20 minutes writing an email to me about why they're poor and how the wealthy people are evil and that pursuing wealth is evil. And I'm reading it and I'm like, my God, this person is never going to escape poverty because they actually are blaming everybody for their poverty. They're blaming the government. They're blaming rich people. They're blaming their own employer. They're blaming Wall Street. They're blaming all of these organizations and individuals and groups for their poverty. Sometimes they blame their parents. I was born poor and it's my parents' fault because I'm poor and you might be right that in your case, your parents really screwed you over or you got into working for a bad company or whatever, but that entitlement ideology is not going to help you. It's if anything, it's going to keep you poor. It's going to keep you anchored in poverty because one of the traits that the wealthy people had is they had this belief that they were individually responsible for their financial circumstances. Nobody was to blame but themselves because no matter what happened to you from yesterday all the way into the beginning of time, from here on, it's what you do, your behaviors, your actions, the choices that you make that will dictate if you're going to continue to be poor. So if you have an entitlement ideology, you've already taken a handcuff and you've attached it to a poverty pole. You're never going to escape poverty.
Well, we actually mingle two things there because definitely the entitlement ideology, but Tom, there's also the victim ideology that was the last point I was going to bring, that people believe others are holding themselves back. They believe that they're the victims and they look at outside circumstances and they're also the entitlement mentality that we were talking about a moment ago means that people tend to think that there should be a redistribution of wealth from the rich to the poor. And there's no doubt that the rich are getting richer and there are a lot of social and economic consequences from that. But from what I'm hearing from you, Tom, you're saying it's actually not as much a wealth gap in our countries that we're experiencing. You're calling it a parent gap. What do you mean by that?
I love telling the story about Dr. Ben Carson, who ran for president in 2016. He's a neurosurgeon. He's retired, but he was raised with his brother Curtis in the ghetto in Detroit. In a single parent household, his father abandoned them, and his mother raised them. Well, what was interesting was their mom, despite the fact that they were poor, she did not want her kids to you know, be anchored in poverty. So she forced them to read. She made them read and send her every week a Friday. They had to give her, hand her a summary of what they read that week. Well, that indoctrinated in them a habit, a reading habit, and they both became wildly successful in their careers. And you know, Ben Carson was a neurosurgeon and Curtis was a brake engineer at Boeing. And so, you know, you can say, look, I'm stuck in poverty and there's nothing I can do about it. Or you can say, if Ben Carson can do it, I can do it.
Now, interestingly, Tom, at the beginning of this year, somebody I was mentoring asked me how they can grow and become more successful in their profession. And I said to them, I want you to read two articles or two blogs a day. But more than that, I actually want you to take it in and make a little note about what you have read, because it actually helps sink it in, just the bullet points of what you've got out of it. And we've got this little computer program, and send it to me and tell me what you've read. And let me just be your unreasonable friend, your mentor, to make sure you've done it. Well, the first couple of days he did more than two. He read three, and then it dropped down to two. And then the habit stopped. He just didn't continue on. Life got in the way. That's interesting. It's 8 to 10 months later down the track. And every other idea I'd given him along the way about how to change, how to improve, he did it for a while and then it stopped. And it was always other people's fault. It was life got in the way. Oh, my kids got sick. My car broke down. I had to go by train to work instead. So it's not easy to change. It's not easy to adopt good habits. And you don't have to do them all at once, do you, Tom? Just one at a time. But then you've got to stick with it. And once that becomes a habit, because doing it twice, three times isn't a habit, once it becomes a habit, then you layer one on top of the other.
Yeah, this is where my book, Change Your Habits, Change Your Life, that was why I wrote that book, because I wanted to introduce people to the shortcuts. I wanted them to understand the science behind habits and then introduce them to the shortcuts to habit change. And one of the shortcuts is don't bite off too much. You baby step your way into habit change. And why is that? So the mistake that the person you were trying to mentor made was he was trying to do too much. Let's say he limited his reading to 15 minutes a day. You say, just do that, you know, for the first, you know, 2 weeks. And then if you can, increase it to 20 minutes for the next 2 weeks. And then if you can, increase it to 30 minutes. The whole reason that works, Michael, is because the baby stepping, what it does is it engages certain neurons that start firing together, and they repeatedly fire together. And even though you're doing little things, those neurons just keep getting fired. And then the brain, this is what's going on behind the scenes. Your prefrontal cortex says, hey, basal ganglia, I want you to check out this group of neurons. They've been firing together for the last like 6 weeks. So the basal ganglia will send the dendrite right up into that mass of neurons and monitor it. And if the basal ganglia decides that this is a habit, it's going to mark it as a habit by permanently embedding a dendrite into that neural cells and then sending another dendrite to the prefrontal cortex that says, okay, this dendrite is for the trigger. Once the habit gets triggered, I'm going to turn on the habit. And then it sends the instruction to the prefrontal cortex whenever a trigger occurs to start reading. What might be the trigger? The trigger is the time of day that you're supposed to do your reading. Maybe like I do my reading at 5 to 8 in the morning every day. As soon as I wake up, the trigger is I go down to the basement and I start reading. That's my trigger, waking up. But it's a habit now because I started out with 15 minutes. I built it up to 30 minutes, and now I'm doing an hour every day. I couldn't stop doing it if I wanted to. I even find myself doing it on Saturdays and Sundays.
The problem, of course, in this particular case was he didn't get a result quickly enough. He actually read, and nothing changed in his life. He was expecting unrealistic changes too soon. I guess I was trying to show him the concept of delayed gratification, but that's the topic for another podcast. Tom, we've just gone through 10 of the hard truths, the facts that have come out of your study of why we've got a wealth gap. And yeah, there are problems with the political system, and there is problems with the financial system, and there are challenges in life. But we also have to recognize that if those other things were changed and the banks actually gave everyone more money or the jobs gave you more wages, things wouldn't change. I believe, Tom, if you took all the money in the world and distributed it evenly in 5 years' time or whenever, it's going to be back in the same proportions again in the same people's pockets. So we've got to change ourselves. We've got to recognize where our bad habits have come from. We've got to recognize them and change them. Otherwise, nothing will change. Tom, thank you so much for another great chat. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon for our monthly Rich Habits, Poor Habits podcast.
Yep. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it.
Well, as I said at the beginning of today's show, some of what we said may be uncomfortable with some people, may even offend some people, but it's a result of Tom's research, and I concur with many of the things that he said. So there is a wealth gap in our Western countries, and it is getting bigger, but it doesn't have to mean that you can't be wealthy. We're living in the best time in history. We're living at a time in the sort of country where most people listen to this podcast, where you can make your future by thinking the right things, by doing the right things. Remember, your thoughts lead to your feelings lead to your actions, and your actions lead to your results. So start having some more rich habits, fewer poor habits. You can learn more about that by getting a copy of Tom and my book, Rich Habits, Poor Habits, at richhabitspoorhabits.com or on Amazon. And you too can join the rich rather than letting the wealth gap leave you behind. Now, we run these regular Rich Habits, Poor Habits podcasts once a month in between the regular Michael Yardney podcast, but you can get a lot more information from Tom Cawley at propertyupdate.com.au, my website where every day a newsletter goes out with lots of information about property, success, money, the psychology of success, finance. And you can keep up with me. Just chase me at any of the social media, particularly Instagram. Look for Michael Yardney, and I'd love to catch up with you because I'm having a lot more fun on Instagram today, getting to know a lot of you who are listening. Of course, twice a week, I'm going to give you regular updates on the Michael Yardney podcast. So in the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?